This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
Siobhan Scott is joining us, psychotherapist and author. We are going to be talking about a psychological enigma that is Chad and Lori Daybell and the perfect storm that seemed to have brewed when those two came together. We are now less than a month away from Lori Daybell and her trial taking place, jury selection starting in just like over 2 weeks. It's right around there. It's, yeah. Crazy to think it's almost here. Obviously, Siobhan, I know you are not an attorney, but obviously well-versed in the world of mental health and mental health being such a big part of her story, already had trials and hearings delayed because of that. And there's talk that mental health is not even going to be brought up in this trial. How does one go on to try and defend somebody like Lori Vallow Daybell?
You know, it's kind of a strange one because everyone who's, you know, all the mental health people who have examined her, spent time with her, everybody is under the strong impression that she has a pretty severe mental health condition. She's not so disorganized that she can't hold it together in court. So she's been determined to be competent to, you know, be in court and work with her attorney. But I don't know what defense they're going to come up for her. You know, I was reading that they're not planning to use any mental health evidence and that she's claiming to be not guilty and that she was, you know, elsewhere when the kids were killed. So I don't really know what they can come up with for this. I'm curious.
I am too. It's kind of a mystery. It seems like with a lot of the stories that we follow, we kind of know what we're going to see going into this, but it almost feels like this is a very well-guarded secret of like a movie premiere or something like
what is going
to happen here.
Yeah, I would hate to be her attorney. I mean, I guess if you're an attorney, you enjoy these kinds of challenges, but I don't know where I would go with this one. It's going to be a hard one to defend, I think.
I think so as well. Obviously, they've been separated now, Lori and Chad, two separate trials. My question to you would be, what kind of a difference in trials are we going to see here? What sort of different types of charges are going to be brought against them that it warrants two separate trials?
Right. I'm not really sure. I think everybody is on the same page that Chad was the one who actually killed the children, but that Lori was in collusion with him about this. And you know, the whole thing is just really strange. So I'm eager to see what they do with it, but I don't see an innocent verdict, certainly. And so then it's a question of, is it death penalty or not?
And that's an interesting thing with the thought that Chad may have been the one who actually did murder the kids, allegedly. Someone who kind of created their own universe, their own, you know, Marvel universe, if you will, except it's the Chad Daybell religion universe where they believe that they're going to be gods and goddesses in Rexburg. And obviously this came to through him. This was his own making, his own invention. Whether he believed it or not is a whole other question, but he believed something enough to allegedly kill these children. Whether Lori was involved or not, Lori seems to be along with the idea. I guess my question would be, and it's a very broad one, but how does one go from having some sort of doomsday beliefs to then eventually killing your wife's children in that vein? And it, when was it done more so in the belief system like Lori believes and has that steadfast, they're zombies, this is what needs to be done? Or do you think Chad was a little bit more on the page of, I'm going to do whatever this woman wants because I finally got a woman that I'm attracted to and she believes my bullshit?
Yeah, the layers of crazy here are deep. And certainly with Lori, the phone calls and the different interviews that I've seen with her, truly a strong paranoid streak. So I think she completely believes her own story. And it's a terrible kind of mental illness to have, because the people can often, when they have this kind of fixed paranoid delusional system, they can hold it together superficially enough to fly to Hawaii and arrange a wedding and, you know, get on the airplane. It's not like they're so completely psychotic in every area that they can't hold it together, because certainly that's more common with psychosis rather than these sort of more narrow fixed delusions. But the fixed delusions are harder to treat. And I really believe that whatever this bizarre belief system that they were caught up in, that she believed it 100%. And it's quite possible he does too. You know, it's the term for it is folie à deux. And this is when two people get together and they both have a pre-existing mental health condition, but when you put them together, it grows and it solidifies. And that's, they're just a marvel example of that. It's really dramatic in their case.
Is it because they just continue to reinforce each other's delusional beliefs?
Exactly. They reinforce each other, and it just builds this emotional intensity between the two of them that makes it stronger. And it can get crazier and crazier. So you don't see it often, but when you do see it, it's pretty intense.
Were they almost like a perfect storm for this, where they both had these issues, and then had Lori ended up with somebody else who had doomsday beliefs, but maybe not quite like Chad did, or vice versa, that this would have been a more peaceful story, or there wouldn't have been a story at all?
Yeah, exactly. It could have gone in a very different direction, but the two of them with the mental health conditions that they each had, when they got together, it really turned into something incredibly dangerous.
How does one go about treating something like this? I know you said it's very difficult when they are going down these sort of roads. Obviously, the individual who needs the treatment needs to want the treatment for it to be effective. If you're the loved one of someone, if you're Lori's surviving brother or a parent, or you're one of Chad's surviving family members, and you want this person to get help, let's say these murders never even occurred. Let's say there's no charges even going on, but they know that these people are believing these extremely delusional things. They think there's the possibility that there could be violence at some point. So I guess we're going right before the area of where the children were killed. How would someone get help for someone that they care about, that are almost unreachable as a loved one?
Yeah, it's incredibly challenging. And what I usually tell loved ones in those situations is get a really good clinician on board. And often the clinician has to work with the family primarily at first in order to come up with a plan to coerce the loved one into treatment somehow. Because the loved one, you can't just go up to them and say, I think you're having a mental health crisis. I think you need to talk to someone, because paranoid people will deny it. Yeah. And then you become the enemy because you're out to get them too. Mm-hmm. But there are often ways that a mental health person could find some some way to make a connection with them. And it might be from playing along with the delusion, at least superficially for a little bit of time, to gain their trust. And sometimes they'll come to therapy to convince, let's say, an adult child that they're not crazy. And so they'll come in with this justification that, well, I'm going to prove to you that I'm fine. And this therapist is going to help me prove that. So in a way, you have to kind of go along with the delusion at least a little bit, just to get them to talk to someone. And then hopefully a really talented therapist can get an inroad and maybe get them on some medication. You know, I've seen it work a few times, but it is really challenging.
Well, half the battle will be just to get them to see a therapist, number
exactly,
one.
Exactly. And they will never go in for their own problem. So they might go in to help their family learn to accept that they are right, and how to help the family. So sometimes they'll come in the door for that reason. And if it's a really talented therapist, they may be able to gain their trust and then start to work with them. But yes, just getting them in the door, if you say, I want you to go see someone because you're crazy, it'll never work.
Sure. How often are individuals like this able to fool a therapist into thinking, no, this is really, and they're able to twist it and make the family member that is trying to bring them in to get some help, to have the therapist believe, well, maybe it is the other way around. Maybe this person really does have it together.
Yeah, I think if the therapist doesn't talk to the family member, and get the full story, it's very easy to fool a therapist, because a person like this can come in and they may not ever go into the belief about the zombies or the strange, you know, the strange aspects of what they're involved in. And so they can present a very convincing facade superficially. So I always encourage family members, when someone is delusional, give the therapist some time privately, you know, either on the phone or meet with them in person, so you can, you know, get the whole story out there. And then when they meet with that person, they'll know how to target their questions and they should be able to pick it up.
What does that say about the delusion, though? If the person, the person who has the mental illness knows what to say and what not to say. Lori Daybell is a good example of that. Well, not necessarily, we don't have any information about her speaking with a therapist, but her interviews with police, she doesn't go into the details about zombies or anything like that. She knew
exactly.
She knew exactly where the bounds were. She knew what to play. She knew what sounded utterly batshit crazy.
Exactly.
But then still believed the batshit crazy, it seems. Is that a delusion? If there's a piece of her that says, you don't want to talk to this about with the police because it's a bit much.
I think it's still a delusion. They just have a sense for, okay, this is the truth, but these, if you want to call them the unbelievers, you know, and you see this in a lot in religions, they will filter out the unpleasant aspects of the religion because they know the unbelievers aren't going to buy it. And so it doesn't really diminish the fact that they still believe this crazy stuff, but they know, okay, I'm just not going to share the whole story because these unbelievers who just aren't enlightened, they're not going to get it. So they filter.
What is it about when you add a version of some sort of religion into things that makes people just feel like, I'm going to latch onto this, no matter how bizarre it may possibly be? That's always been fascinating to me, because you can go on a lot of different roads and people be like, yeah, but I'm not going to believe that or whatever. But once you add some sort of a God aspect to it, no matter how crazy it may be for some, they will go down it simply because that idea of God or Jesus or whoever is connected to it. And that seems to be part of the case here with the Daybells.
Yeah, when you get into magical thinking, it really gets dangerous. And I talk with people about this a lot, because, you know, magical thinking is okay when you're 2 or 3 years old, you know, but when you're 20 or 30, you're in a danger zone. And there are lots of more legitimate religions that are not as crazy as the Daybells. Mm-hmm. But you're right. If people are really invested in magical thinking because it meets their emotional needs, you can convince them of a lot of weird stuff. It's like, I think the whole People's Temple and Jim Jones cult, the doomsday cult where they all drank the Kool-Aid and died. I think that's probably, from what I've read, started off as being fairly conventional, you know, communal Christianity, but it got crazier and crazier once people swallowed the magical thinking, and that led to the Kool-Aid. So I'm always really cautious with people about the supernatural stuff, even when they say, oh, well, it's really this benign thing. It is benign, perhaps, in the beginning, but it can shift, it can change, particularly if you get a person who's got very, you know, very dark beliefs taking power in a group.
It's a matter of really, it's conditioning, isn't it? I mean, you just kind of keep like, there's the deep end of the pool. We're going to start at 2 feet and you're okay. You know, you can go over here a little bit, but now you may need some floaties. You know, it's deeper, but you're okay. And you get deeper and deeper. And eventually the person's floating in the 20 foot end of the pool. They're not dead, but they're floating, but they wouldn't have just jumped into that 20 foot area right away.
Exactly. It's the kind of the religious cult seduction process. You know, when you start off, it's all, oh, we just love each other and we're doing these good altruistic things in the world. And it sounds lovely. And here's a potluck and here's a musical event. But then pretty soon it turns into, and you're supposed to have sex with the leader and sell your daughters and drink the Kool-Aid, and it gets crazier and crazier. So I'm really cautious about those things. I just personally in my life, I stay away from groups of people with supernatural beliefs at this point.
Sure. That's a safe way to live life, isn't it?
It works better that way. Yeah.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
Siobhan Scott, thank you for your insight into the case of Lori Vallow Daybell. We got more to talk with Siobhan about, including the Gabby Petito case. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the Laundries, the parents of Brian, and their bizarre behavior. Cold, cruel, callous behavior to the Petito family when their daughter was missing before a body was even found. What did they know? When did they know it? And why did they not talk? That's coming up. Press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. You don't miss that conversation. It's on the way for you in just a bit. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.